Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Season 6 of Stand Up and Stand Out, Parte y Destacate. I'm your hostess with the mostest, Nikki Green, and we're taking it back to the old school with our original guest interviews you have come to love. We spent the last two seasons learning more about the two books I launched this year, Chameleon Mindset and The Great Lead Hership Awakening. And now that I've come up for air from the writing and publishing process, I wanted to reach out to my network and share more of the great work others are doing. I hope you enjoy Season 6, and I look forward to hearing your feedback and comments on the fascinating topics we will cover with each of these new guests. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Stand Up and Stand Out. Another wonderful guest for you today. I'm excited to introduce another member of my wonderfully expanding community of entrepreneurs doing good things in the world. So Isis Fabian helps organizations connect with and prepare for the next generation by uprooting harmful and outdated cultural norms and beliefs through consulting and speaking on a broad range of issues. Informed by their research background in corporate culture, advancement for members of historically marginalized groups, and experiences across race, gender, neurodiversity, LGBTQIA+, disability, and more. That was the short version. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, Nikki. Thank you so much. So excited to be here and talking about the next generation of talent, all the changes that need to happen in the workplace.
Yeah, there's so much here. And you and I met through a wonderful community from Only, and I was visiting, getting to know the members, and even just with the group of folks there, you and I kind of connected and spent a little bit more time together. So maybe let's start there. Like, kind of what has been the benefit of some of these communities that you belong to, and how does that help kind of educate your work and inform you there?
Oh, yeah. I think Only in particular, I want to call out a separate, I think, from some of these other networking groups and places, because I feel like I'm meeting real people there and having real conversations. One of the things, you know, I'm in a kind of niche area. I don't tend to meet many people at Only who do similar things to me, or in similar industries or networks, although I have met a lot of secondary and tertiary connections through people at Only, which have been amazing. But I always get something out of these conversations because I educate on these really sensitive topics, right? Like trans rights and all these zeitgeist issues, pronouns and gender identity, religious differences, like these things that no one wants to talk about. No one wants to touch on the 10-foot pole. And I get to hear from real regular people, frankly, about their feelings, the kind of questions that they won't ask, the thoughts that they have on these topics, when we just kind of get to know each other in these very casual, very friendly one-to-one conversations. I think Only is a place that attracts and only seems to have people who are people, right? Like they're comfortable just talking with a person that they just met on a Zoom screen. It doesn't feel like awkward. It's just people meeting people and having conversations about all kinds of things. And the elephant in the room in a lot of these networking groups is that, like, you don't know if this person's good at what they do. So great, you do web design. Why would I refer someone if they network to you? I have no idea if you're any better at web design than the next person, right? So it is about actually building a relationship and getting a sense of that person's intelligence and competency and reliability as you're staying in touch, as you're keeping each other up to date on things. And then you actually get to the place where you would refer them or for business to them. So I think that only solves for that elephant better than a lot of other groups do.
One, it's so important. It's really something I'm trying to do with my community and the Chameleon Crew is I want to make sure that the mentors that are in there, you know, and not just calling it a networking group, but really the mentors and mentees are experts in their areas, you know, and that I've done work with them, that I've collaborated with them personally. And it's not just, oh, randomly, well, you paid the fee, so you're on, you know, you can come on in. And I really appreciate that about some of these groups because, and I've talked about it in previous episodes, last year, I got burned with a lot of, you know, different businesses that said they were going to provide, like you said, certain specific services to deliver my book and do certain things. And they simply didn't deliver. And by Christmas last year, I was in tears and I fired them all. And so I don't want to do that again. And I've heard so many other horror stories of people just really wanting to make that personal connection, not just for business, but to really have a long-term relationship with people and how important it is. And I know you belong with other communities that can help with that too, because that longer-term like connection, I think, is really critical for our future.
Absolutely. When you have a real relationship, then you access someone's actual network and and the people in it who need your services, and the foundational relationship has to be where it starts.
Let's talk about, you know, some of the great work that you do. You know, one of the challenges that I've been seeing and hearing as I'm talking to lots of different corporations, you know, we've seen lots of news around, hey, there's been layoffs, there's been cutbacks, then all these things with the recession. And one of, unfortunately, the things I think that has hit the chopping block in a lot of places is a lot of DEI initiatives, dedicated resources to be working on these things in corporations. So maybe talk about what you've seen and how that's affecting those that are still, you know, marginalized and not getting the support that they need for their jobs.
Yeah, it's there's a lot that needs to be said about the diversity and inclusion industry that's not being said, frankly. I've been in and around the industry for over a decade, and I've seen all of these ebbs and flows. I've worked directly with a lot of diversity departments. I have been in-house in a diversity department. And unfortunately, one of the realities I've seen is that even when you have the best and the brightest people on these teams, I frankly have never seen a team that's truly set up for success to impact the broader culture of the organization. And so I think there's a dual issue happening where on the one hand, you have, you know, companies saying, this is just window dressing that we no longer feel like we need to virtue signal with, just because they've seen the backlash to diversity and inclusion. They've seen maybe these more conservative voices coming out against it. And they haven't seen, in many cases, the business impact that they quote unquote want, because they haven't enabled that business impact. And then on the other side, you have diversity and inclusion teams, some of whom are really fighting the good fight, others who have become kind of complacent with doing these, you know, executive presence programs and just kind of setting up employee resource groups and checking boxes. And that's all they've ever been able to do. When they've been around for, you know, these teams have seen maybe 5, 6, 7 different people, like whole team cycle through, different chief diversity officers cycle through. The average tenure of a chief diversity officer has always been only about 2 years. And so it's just this resetting over and over again. Meanwhile, the actual workforce is getting more diverse than ever, right? I think 1 in 5 Gen Z people identify as trans or non-binary. Like, it is, and neurodivergence rates of diagnosis, especially of ADHD and autism, are skyrocketing for people of all ages. And so we have this tension where the real workforce is getting more diverse. They're coming up against the same issues that have always been present in the workplace. And in fact, they're chafing at some of these window dressing diversity and inclusion efforts that say one thing while they are turning around and experiencing a team or a manager or a corporate leader that is doing the complete opposite. Like, I just spoke to a product manager a couple weeks ago who was saying, like, yeah, the company I'm at now has no formal diversity and inclusion department or like formalized labeled efforts. And yet I would say the diversity and inclusion here is much better than my previous company, which had a team that was well-resourced for the size of the company that did a lot of events, right? But the actual makeup of the workforce, the path to leadership, being a woman of color who's not American in this case, just wasn't there. And the rhetoric from leadership just did not match on what was coming out of diversity and inclusion. So I think we're at a really interesting inflection point in identity crisis for that industry right now, because they are losing the funding. The roles are going away. But the answer can't be, we have to fight back to get those same roles. We have to go back to doing DEI the way we were doing it. This is why I advocate for conscious leadership as a competency, and saying this cannot be a department. You might have people in-house who are responsible for creating this competency, but ultimately the burden has to sit with leadership. The expectation, the onus, right? It has to sit with leadership and the behavior of managers and leaders. And over time, it's just become something that's totally outsourced to this department. It's like having an emotional intelligence department. Like, they can't do it. So a lot is happening in the mix. And we're going to come out of this looking very different, I think, than the DEI industry used to look.
And I think that can be a good thing. Because like you said, I think one of the things we've always struggled with is like, here's the authoritarian department that's going to come in and tell you how it's done. For me, I was in compliance, right? So, you know, I had to make mandatory training and everyone's got to take it and I got to go chase everybody. And it was like, did that make the compliance of that particular, you know, accounting rule or whatever better? Probably not. Most people are just like, man, this is annoying. I have work to do, right? And so the more we can intrinsically add it to the way we actually do business, and we're better educated and more compassionate and empathetic and able to really make that connection and make it a part of our everyday, that's when it's going to be what it needs to be. If we're constantly like, no, you're wrong, this is the right way, it's just going to keep making people, I think, feel isolated and other, you know, different groups feeling marginalized. And that's not really the intent. I think especially as we've spent a lot of time talking about this shift of the generations, now Gen Z coming into the workforce with four different generations really in the workforce and, you know, different views on what we should be doing. Are we in the office? Are we out of the office? Are we productive hybrid? You know, and adding those complexities into it all. So maybe let's talk a little bit about that generational shift. I also think, you know, boomers and Gen X are going to probably be retiring a lot earlier than previous generations because they've prepared. They were like, you know, I don't want to be here forever. I did this to get to a certain point and then I'll do work, but I'll open my own business or do my own thing. And I feel like Gen Z is going to be in charge way earlier than we're expecting, and they're not going to be prepared. So what are you seeing with the kind of the generational shifts happening in the workplace?
Well, I think for one, we're already seeing millennials moving in on the tail end of Gen X to take over some of those boomer positions, right? Because Gen X is a much smaller generation compared to millennials and compared to boomers. And so we're seeing millennials, if you are very talented, if you have that ambition and that drive as a millennial, you don't really hear the story of like, oh, I can't advance. Oh, I'm stuck, you know, and stagnant. It's like the opportunity is there if you want it. More often you hear the opposite, which is like, oh my God, so much being thrown at me at once. I'm not ready for this promotion. Like I hear that from millennials a lot, right? But millennials do have this attitude that's creating a gateway for Gen Z who, to take a step back, is coming in with a totally different worldview, right? I tend not to like to generalize about generations, say these people are like this, these are like this, but there are these things that happen in the world and in our society that impact the way that we experience things. I did one big research project on millennials, found that 9/11 and the 2008 financial crisis, right? These are things that came up for everybody. If you were a younger millennial, you were a child when, you know, 9/11 happened, and you just from the beginning of your life, when you first are starting to form thoughts, you're like, horrible things happen. Thousands of people die. The world hates America. Like you're learning that at a very young age. You don't have to kind of undo decades of believing the opposite, right? That does something. The 2008 crisis, right? Seeing parents lose jobs. Older millennials lost their jobs. They were first in, most recently in, first out, right? So they had a horrible kind of launch pad to their careers and their home buying process and all that. Meanwhile, Gen X were the ones who got to pick up on all the foreclosures in 2008. So there really was this big rift there in terms of financial privilege between millennials and Gen X, especially with how much millennials have taken on in college loans. And so now we have Gen Z who has seen millennials struggle through these things, seen millennials be promised these things and not get them, right? See them kind of getting hit from all sides. And Gen Z had the pandemic, right? Which took away in-person college. It took away senior prom. It took away in-person graduation. Depending on what age you were, maybe you were going to be the star of the musical your senior year. You didn't get to do that. It's like different for each of them, but it's something really profound. And not many other generations had the world fall apart before their eyes like that. And so I think there's a real lack of understanding from older generations about the kind of crystal clear presence to the present moment that Gen Z has, because they're not taking the future for granted. They're not taking a retirement, 401k, these kinds of things. I keep hearing from people who are Gen Z who say, I don't put any money in my 401k. I need that money now. I don't buy that the stock market's going to be doing what it's supposed to be doing when I'm 60 or 70, right? I don't even know what's going to happen for millennials, right? They see Social Security running out of money, all of these things. And so there is this desire to be present, to live their lives while they have it, to clock out at 5. And part of the reason companies are having so much trouble suppressing that behavior is because millennials are in these positions as managers and increasingly as senior leaders, and they're just throwing their hands up. They're like, more power to them. You know, I'm having a rough time. I don't care. It would have been me if it could have been. You know, I'm glad they're starting this revolution. So there's a real tension there with the older generations, and I'd say millennials and Gen Z are more aligned than not on the whole.
And I love it, though. You know, I really do advocate for them. For, you know, when I hear, you know, managers and leaders like, oh, well, you know, you just need to put in the time and the work and the, it's like, no, we didn't really learn something from that. You know what we did? We lost time with our families. When I left my corporate job, my biggest regrets I put on one sheet because I said, no, as we're going forward, we really need to do better with this. I miss birthdays. I miss weddings. I miss baby showers. I miss Christmases. You know, like too many important family moments just gone, you know, and for what? For people that didn't care about me 2 seconds later, you know, it was in the moment that was the most important thing. And yes, I get that, like, you know, we do kind of need to go out of our comfort zone to like do new things and push ourselves a little bit, but we really have to get back to a better balance of being able to take care of ourselves. And I think this younger generation also realizes that their parents were gone all the time. Their parents were always working, especially with laptops and cell phones and all these things. I don't know how many people that I know that had kids are like, oh, well, I'm on vacation, you know, we're going to Hawaii, except, well, I'll take this meeting and that meeting and I'll respond to emails within 4 hours instead of 2 minutes, you know, and it's just like, no, go on vacation with your family and enjoy and detach, and you will come back a better employee and you will come back better and plugged in. And so we really, this is my important message to so many, is we've got to find these balance between these things. Of like, I can't force you to be in the office. I can't force you to do DEI. I can't force you, you know, to be a certain way. But how do we make sure that we're taking care of ourselves and taking care of our work at the same time? So I know that's a lot of the great work that you're doing with many places.
And that's been another one of the shifts, right? Is the always on 24/7 smartphone. Like in the grand scheme of things, smartphones are relatively recent, not for Gen Z. I mean, they grew up on smartphones. But for everybody else, we remember when there was a world without smartphones and even a world without laptops for your job. A lot of people working desk job, 9 to 5 in the office. When you left the office, you left your computer behind in a lot of companies. That was still normal, relatively common. There's probably not a single company out there where that's the case now, right? You always have the means to be replying to emails, to be getting on your laptop, wherever you are, as long as you have an internet connection, that expectation is now there. And so I've seen what you've seen, which is people just falling apart at the seams as they try to like, oh, I'll just get this done tonight so I don't have to do it in the morning. In the morning, there's another thing that you have to do that you wouldn't have done if you had just gone offline, right? There's always more work. And I see especially women taking on 2-3 times the labor load in the workplace because we're acculturated to be helpful, right? To say, well, it's going to take that person 3 hours to do it. It'll take me 20 minutes to do it. So I'll just do it. And then it becomes your responsibility. And then it becomes a thankless, invisible thing that you are doing to keep the company going, right? And we're always looking for those things like, what helps the company? What's best for the team? What's best for the organization? Oh, I'll just take that on myself, or I'll just redo that process, or I'll just, you know, cut that time out of my timeline to accommodate this person that's always late on their deadline, whatever it is. And it's just invisible. It piles on. There's no recognition or reward for it. And so much of advancement in these workplaces has become about politics, how things look, right? Portraying a certain image of how you're working and what you're doing rather than the actual work itself. And while millennials have been caught up in that and kind of got screwed over by learning by doing and learning all about the hard way and experiencing it the hard way, again, we have this younger generation that is seeing all this and is like, this is not paying off the way that it should for this amount of work, this amount of effort and self-sacrifice. Like, they're just not buying it.
More on a positive note, one thing that I'm really seeing that I'm loving is the support, again, for trades and, you know, even like military service and opening up some of these things to other people that maybe wouldn't have thought of doing that path. And so, like, I've seen a lot of women going into welding and, you know, there's just these great aspects where starting to change sort of, again, like the gender roles that we've maybe previously assigned to some of these. And even like, oh, okay, well, you can still get a college degree and do many of these jobs because many of these jobs are more technical than they've ever been before. Maybe you start, you know, doing the job itself and then you run a business doing it. And so there's so much more opportunity, I think, for this. And so I'm excited to see how some of these other areas might positively transform and take advantage of the corporations not listening, you know, and then trying to do new things. So I'm not sure if you've seen some of that in your work as well.
What I've definitely seen related to that is this lessening of ego and superficiality around certain quote unquote accomplishments in life, right? So like more people comfortable living with their parents, right? They're like, nothing to be ashamed of living with my parents. When I was graduating college, that would have been a big problem, right? For me, for my social life, my friends, my social life, I've been like an abject failure. That's how it was back then. That is how it was perceived, right? Now we're in a completely different place. People are like, why would I be wasting this much money on rent? And they're just really reconsidering, how do I get what I need, do what I need to live the life that I want right now and not mortgage, you know, my future, not have to just put all my hopes and dreams into a future that may or may not exist because the sky's on fire right now and who knows what's going to happen next. And so I do think that when it comes to the trades and these other industries, these other roles that people might previously not have considered, there is more of an appetite and there is more openness to just like, wait a second, I can actually be, you know, an apprentice and learn on the job and get a good salary and get good benefits and have something tangible that I'm doing that is not, you know, something that'll be eaten up by AI, for instance, right? Which is coming for much more of those, you know, white collar office type responsibilities than the tangible trades that we need people to learn. So that's what I'm seeing, is just less of that ego around having to own a house, for instance, thinking I'm going to be able to do that at some point, when most people, that's not the case anymore. They're like, they've let go of that. Living with a bunch of roommates, having to be in a relationship, even women more and more. So many women got divorced during the pandemic and are like, I am never going back, right? And they've become a louder and louder voice online. So what's that telling the next generation of like, you don't need to be partnered to be worthy. You don't need to have a man co-signing everything you're doing. In fact, you might be a lot happier without one, just as one example, right? So I do think that that's going to lead to exactly what you're talking about, a lot more openness and willingness to go where you are being received and rewarded adequately and not having so much you know, superficiality around how and why we make these decisions.
Yeah, I really am excited to see these transformations. I think they are going to, you know, continue to be a cascade and domino effect of things coming together, because another good friend of mine who I had on the podcast a couple seasons ago, she talked about, you know, when she graduated from her master's program, there was like a name and shame list of like where you went to work after you graduated and also your salary. And if you weren't making at least six figures, you were basically like garbage. And they didn't even want to say, like, they didn't want you to put that you went to that school, like on your LinkedIn profile and things like that. So I'm really hoping like some of that, you know, like the brand is the thing that matters and the money is the thing that matters, starts to go away. And we start thinking about the brand of ourselves, of like what's important to me, my values, and making sure I'm living the life that's important to me and building out my purpose, that becomes the central theme for people. And you find ways to do that within the constructs that are available to us, right?
Absolutely. And companies, they really want to be acquiring and retaining the brightest talent of the next generation. They need to get better at not looking at the school you went to, the stuff that's pedigree, the stuff that's manner. I mean, some people, the best and brightest people I've hired, they come from a broad range of backgrounds. Hospitality, for instance, right? I've worked in food and beverage. I know a lot of people who have. There are so many incredible skills you learn there that most companies, because they have this pedigree mindset and the people who set these hiring parameters have never worked in the service industry, they don't even think about these other skill sets. You're not looking at the fact that someone went to a state school while holding three jobs and they graduated on time. That's not a skill set that you want in your workforce, right? So instead of complaining like, oh, no one wants to work anymore, we can't find qualified talent, especially from, you know, different backgrounds from historically marginalized groups. It's like, no, that's because you have so many biases about who is good and why, and you're letting their resume do the talking instead of using your critical thinking skills to assess someone's potential to do the job. Give them the chance to do it, right? That's what I've seen throughout my career, is you give someone talented the chance to show their talent, and then they will succeed and they will, you know, advance quickly. And you just have to give them the opportunity to show their talent. They don't become talented because you're teaching them to be talented on the job. That's pretty rare, right? I think that, and I have an econ degree, I think, you know, a lot of people I know, I'm like, I ask them, like, you could have done this job when you graduated high school, right? You could have done, you would have been just, you would have been really good at this job. You've been better than that guy who's 5 years older than you and went to some whatever. Like, it's not about what you learned in college. It's not about the pedigree of the place you went to. It's not about how rich your family is. It really is like human potential and human ability lies across the spectrum. And companies right now are very bad at assessing for actual potential from unconventional backgrounds. There's so much talent left on the table.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And I could spend days and days talking to you about this. And maybe we need a sequel for this one, because I think that there's a lot of rich content here and ways to continue help people lead better. That is why I left my job. I just saw too many of these decisions where you're missing out on great talent. And I, you know, had so many struggles that were keeping me from being successful. And it wasn't until those people really reached out and said, no, I see potential in you, and gave me that leg up to really start to showcase. And that's why I did crazy things that people don't do. I got double promotions. No one ever talks about things like that because no, you go to the step one and then step two. No, I didn't. I leapt over people because I was like, no, this is how you do it. And I connected dots and I made communities and I built a different future. So I see the next generation doing a lot of things like that, just building their own way of how things are going to connect and leaping bounds over people that, you know, think that they had it figured out, but they really haven't had that real life experience, that critical thinking that is the real successful, you know, characteristics for all of us.
Absolutely. And then you have like TikTok and the internet, social media have made it more transparent than ever how much of it is kind of like a political clown show. Right? Like you're realizing like, no, it's just, you know, there's just as many incompetent people at the top of any given corporation. I have seen this in my career. I feel very confident saying this, right? They are throughout. Often the best people stay as frontline managers because they care about human beings. They don't want to be managers of managers of managers of managers. They don't want to become the kind of corporate drone and lose their, you know, connection to the humanity of the people underneath them. A lot of them are really uncomfortable doing that, right? So you start to see those realities. I think younger generation can see it. And they'll probably be starting their own businesses, leveraging social media. We have so many people making a living already off of social media and like the weird stuff that they could do on there. So yeah, I think that's always going to be an alternative that's very attractive versus just like hacking it out to climb the ladder and trading in 40 plus hours of your life a week to some corporate overlord. We're just in a real paradigm shift right now. And it is exciting.
I love it. Yeah, I'm really excited to see because I think, you know, there's going to be businesses that get created that we haven't even dreamed of yet. And they're going to be coming easier and easier. There's lower barriers to entry. So hopefully more groups that maybe wouldn't have had, you know, those big time opportunities, quote unquote, you know, now have an opportunity to just create their own future and make that step forward. Well, time flies so quickly on these shows sometimes, and there's so many good topics for us to cover. But why don't you share with people if they're interested to learning more about the work that you do, or perhaps having you come in to assist them with improving working conditions for, you know, their company? Why don't you let folks know where they can find you?
Yeah, for sure. You can find me at www.isisfabian.com. That's ISISFABIAN.com. I think I'm the only Isis Fabian on LinkedIn, so it should be pretty easy. To find me there as well. That's where I do most of my posting. And I do a really broad range of things. For all my clients, I end up sort of customizing, you know, figuring out what their needs are and customizing, whether it's a series of workshops, executive coaching, some kind of diagnostic on the status of their workforce in terms of DEI competencies or whatever it is, according to their needs. I do have a really broad range of expertise. And you can tell how passionate I am about this stuff. So even just having a chat with someone, I have a booking link on my LinkedIn page just for one-on-one for anyone who wants to chat through this stuff because I love meeting new people and talking about this with anyone who's excited about it as I am.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely excited. I know we're going to continue doing great things together. But thank you so much for being a guest on the show. If you guys enjoyed this episode, please don't hesitate to follow, like, subscribe, click the bell, whatever all the things are that you're supposed to do on each of those platforms. But we're wherever the cool kids hang out that do podcasts, and you can catch us at Stand Up and Stand Out.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us today for another episode of Stand Up and Stand Out. You know you can catch us where all the cool kids hang out that do podcasts on all the major platforms. And if you want to connect with Nikki directly, you can get a hold of me on my personal site, thenikkigreen360.com. There you can check out my website, you can see any of my new books, you can learn more about this podcast, and follow us on social. Can't wait to hear from you, and we'll see you on the next episode. Bye.